Hey guys, it's your girl Bean and welcome back to Late Night Sessions with Bean. I hope I find you well wherever you are in the world. I hope I find you happy and healthy. And I'm back again with an interesting segment for this week. So last week, I had some cool young people with me. I had Muzi Tangwa, who was strong and bold enough to come through and share his experiences and what he went through mentally and physically and spiritually. And we're talking just in general about the topic mental health and mental issues, you know, and everyone was just sharing their nuggets of wisdom. But there were still some blurry lines and some unanswered questions, you know, so I figured, why not get some experts to come in and talk to you guys about, you know, the deeper side of the mind and the psyche and everything that goes on inside. So today I have two amazing guests who are just fountains of knowledge, who have come here, who have decided to take their time to come here and talk to you guys about mental health and give you guys some tips and some information that you can always carry with you so that you're well-informed and you make well-informed decisions. So today I have Dr. Yomi and Ms. Ngwerume, who are going to be here talking to us, and, you know, I'm just going to give them the floor to introduce themselves, and then, you know, we ride the wave and get right into it.
I'm Dr. Abayomi Sajo. I'm a consultation liaison psychiatrist working at the Dr. Everett Chalmers Hospital in Fredericton in Canada.
Okay.
And I've been in Canada now for almost 7 years.
Okay.
Yeah. I am Hajime Ngwerume. I am a mental health practitioner. I have been working on most fields of psychiatry, really. I started off working in forensic psychiatry, then adult psychiatry, then older adults, acute psychiatry, and now I'm a freelance. I work I'm self-employed, so I tend to work for myself with any trust that would that is willing to be assisted in most of its assessments.
Okay.
So normally I do assessments.
So last episode, I had a friend of mine, Muzi Tangwa, and he went through a lot of mental issues, mental breakdown, and there were a lot of unanswered questions from the last episode. So that's why I decided to put together some experts to clear up the blurry lines. So I have a set of questions for you guys, and then you'll answer according to your different experiences. So the first question that I have is, what is mental health actually? I don't think a lot of people know what being mentally healthy means, if it's just happiness, or is it the absence of any mental illness or problems?
Okay, if you want to define it according to the WHO definition, mental health refers to our cognitive, behavioral, and emotional well-being. Mm-hmm. It's all about how we think, behave, and feel. It helps to determine how we handle stress, relate to others, make choices like effective functioning in daily activities resulting in productive activities, healthy relationships, ability to adapt to change and cope with stresses of life, mm-hmm. and then make meaningful contributions to one's community.
Okay. Yeah, that was pretty clear. It's not what I had in mind.
Although I can also add one more thing. Mental health is not just absence of mental disorder.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I had to do that general brief, that kind of broad definition of what it's all about.
Yeah, there's more to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I would agree with Dr. Yomi, because I think it tends to touch it. It's a quite broad spectrum in the sense that it includes emotional, psychological, and social well-being. So it touches all aspects of your life, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it will help us, if somebody's healthy mentally, it means they are able to determine how they handle stress, how they relate to others, and how they make choices. And it is at every stage of life, really, in mental health, from childhood, adolescence, throughout to adulthood. So over the course of life, your thinking or one's thinking is really whether it's determined by your thinking, your mood, and your behavior. Mm-hmm. This could be affected if you're not mentally well. But I think taking a holistic approach to mental health is a better way of looking at it or dealing with it. Because things like trauma as well can affect your mm-hmm. your mental health, and things like biological factors such as your genes and chemicals in the brain can affect your mental health. I'm not sure whether I'm the right person to speak about the brain chemistry. Maybe might know a little bit more than I do, and life experiences as well.
Yeah,
can affect your mental well-being, as well as family history. It can affect that. So it's a really huge spectrum when we look at mental health as a whole. So I think that's how I would look at it, really.
Okay. And I think in the youth or young people in general, the term depression has been misused or used out of context or not correctly understood. So what's really the difference between just life's highs and lows, sadness or stress, and depression?
Okay. We all have life highs and lows. I mean, maybe on your birthday or your graduation, mm-hmm. or maybe if you lose a loved one or you fail an exams, those are normal life's highs and lows. But when you're trying to define depression, is a combination of so many symptoms that will can now say someone is depressed. Things like feeling sad all the time. I'm trying to use the DSM-5 mm-hmm. criteria. You have to have low mood for more than 2 weeks, eating more or eating less, feeling tired or exhausted all the time, no longer deriving pleasure or joy from things that would normally make you happy, like basic things of maybe going to work or watching TV or watching a movie or hanging out with friends. Mm-hmm. During that period, you're kind of withdrawn. You don't want to be with anybody at all. Sometimes you can even start having thoughts of wanting to end your life. You feel kind of helpless or hopeless, not seeing anything, not saying anything good about life.
Yeah.
So when you have a combination of all those symptoms, then you can say at least for 2 weeks, then I can say the person is depressed. But if you just have, maybe today I'm feeling great, I'm happy, I'm hanging out with friends, and then tomorrow or maybe 3 days time, I hear that maybe I've lost a loved one and all that. Of course, those are basic life highs and lows.
Mm-hmm.
So, but for depression, those symptoms have to be sustained for at least 2 weeks.
Okay.
Because, yeah.
So it has to be over a longer period of time.
Yeah, period, yeah. Mm. Okay, yeah.
So, Ms. Ngwerima, are you familiar with the term smiling depression? Is it a thing? Does it exist? How does it look?
I think from my experience of working with people who say they're depressed and yet on the looking at them outwardly,
mm-hmm.
they don't look depressed. They go about their day-to-day life as normal, but I think inside they'll be really suffering. It is there, I think, in the sense that that's why these are the people that sort of carry on in life as normal, or they are sort of the clowns. Like with young people, they are the clowns mm-hmm. of the class. They do everything normally, they'll function. But when they're on their own, they struggle. They'll self-harm silently because they can't cope, and they'll say they can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. But I've seen it mainly with children at the moment, that they'll be coping really well, but they'll be self-harming on the other. Mainly there'll be social aspects, or the environment that they're living in is not conducive at all. So they don't know how to express themselves in that, or they've experienced trauma. So they tend to outwardly look okay, but they
suffering.
They end up, yes. And these are the ones that normally succeed. Sometimes when they harm themselves quite badly. So I think it's just looking out for the regular patterns. We tend to look out for the regular patterns of the patients and see is that their normal pattern, or are they sort of not themselves? So you have to look out, and these are the most difficult ones because they don't verbalize.
Mm-hmm.
sometimes how they're feeling. And that's the most difficult part, because they might act out and not exactly express themselves quite clearly how they're feeling.
Yeah, okay. Your answer actually takes me to another question that I had. How in our social circles or in the family or just people around us in general, can we then tell if someone has a mental problem? Are there signs that we can detect on them and on children, like children that are mentally disturbed? How do you then detect it, because they can't really verbalize?
I think mostly it's looking out for the normal patterns that they have, and also seeking out help. I think if you've got a question mark in your head that I don't think this is right, this behavior is being persistent, but it's not the normal behavior.
Mm-hmm.
I think talking to other people, reaching out is very important, because you might think that it's nothing, it will go away, and it might build up. So I think reaching out to professionals, if children are in school, just checking with the teachers regularly how the child is doing, mm-hmm. if there's any problems, and knowing your child's friends, really, and getting to know them, if they have sleepovers or if they visit, just getting to know the children and how they interact. I think it's quite important, because you might think that it's nothing, it's a phase, because sometimes you might say if they're a teenager, you think they're going through a stage.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes they can be withdrawn, young people, and sort of say, oh, mom, I don't want to talk, or whoever, I just want to be by myself. But you don't know exactly what is going on inside. So it's always good to keep in touch and to keep open lines of communication
mm-hmm.
with the young people.
Well, I think what will probably also help is, like, anything that is out of the normal pattern of behavior of anybody, I mean, that you think that this is a bit, maybe the person is withdrawn, mm-hmm. not as happy as they used to, especially if you're a friend of that person, it's always good to reach out to kind of say what's, I mean, try to be open and say what's going on here. I mean, we're not seeing you as frequently as before, because most people tend to keep, especially when it comes to mental illness, not everybody feels comfortable talking about it. So mm-hmm. family and friends, if they've just noticed something that is out of ordinary in the behavior of that person, the first thing is to try and talk to the person, ask what is going on. Because if you don't reach out, some of these people will never say anything. They just keep everything to themselves. But so far as you reach out to them and ask them, then some of them will be actually be open to the idea of actually opening up to you. And they can now talk about what they are going through. And now then you know how to support them, actually.
Because they know someone is there to have an open ear and a shoulder to lean on.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. If someone is caught in a situation where it's an acute panic or anxiety attack or a mental breakdown, what steps can one take as first aid or as, like, direct action to help out the friend or the stranger or loved one?
Okay, you have to be more specific now. You have panic attack.
Exactly.
Or it's just a mental breakdown.
Like a mental breakdown. Or if, like, if it's not something physical, but it's something inside.
Okay. So the first thing is to reach out to the person, and if you feel it's something that's more, then try and encourage the person to go and see their family physician or GP.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing, because it's not just keeping the person at home and trying to manage it at home. If you feel that there's more to this that you can do as a normal friend, then the first thing, take them to the GP or take them to the emergency room, depending on how acute it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the first thing. Always take them to the hospital or to the family physician, whichever is available, or if there's a walking medical center, at least to be assessed by a professional.
Yeah.
But once they're assessed by a professional, then they can take it from there.
Okay.
I think that will help a lot.
Okay.
I think I would go back to knowing what anxiety is,
mm-hmm.
what the breakdown is. Because if you can separate the two, then you can have an idea of what you're dealing with.
Okay.
Some people would have an anxiety attack if they are going through an exam for children, or if they've got a date, or if they're meeting up with friends.
Might have in that case, I think I've had one too many.
Yeah, that's true.
No, yeah, because everybody can suffer a bout of anxiety, but it's how how serious that bout of anxiety is. Are they having a panic attack that they can't breathe? Because some people end up in A&E because they think they're having a heart attack because of an anxiety attack. So it's very, the two are really separate. And if somebody is having a breakdown, or then you have to see whether is this a breakdown or is this a psychotic episode.
Okay, yeah, that's the other question that we had in the last episode, because he went through something that some doctors were describing as a psychotic episode and some were describing it as a mental breakdown.
Mm-hmm. I think that was a psychotic episode, which was drug-induced, which what that young man was going through, it was a drug-induced psychosis, which, you know, it happens when you take some drugs. You know, you don't know what concoctions of drugs you're taking, and that has an impact on your brain and on your body. And that will make you go, you know, have a psychotic episode. Mm-hmm. So that was drug-induced psychosis. So it's some psychosis is just, you know, you have a psychotic episode because you've gone through trauma or, you know, whatever is going on in your life, or it's the chemicals in the brain. But then you have to differentiate what it is that that person is going through. So that's the job of the psychiatrist, to say, okay, you've taken too many drugs, so it's only this psychotic episode only happened because that person took drugs. But without the drugs, then that person is not going to have a psychotic episode.
Mm-hmm.
So what you have to understand is, if somebody is going through a psychotic episode, let's say in a club for young people, they start going funny, and you know that's not the way they came in, you just have to investigate. Did they take anything? What did they drink, or what did they ingest? You need to know that, and then contact A&E or emergency services, or take them to the doctors. But only if you know. You know, just have enough information of what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a panic attack, an anxiety attack, it generally happens sometimes when there's an occasion or when people are worried about something, then it builds up to anxiety. And it can manifest like a heart attack, because some people find it difficult to breathe. So it's whether that person has got the techniques of managing the anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
The tools to manage. So you've got to have the tools of how you can manage anxiety, which is another, you know, type of discussion that you'd have. You'd have need to have the breathing techniques. You'd have need to relax. You'd need to have people that will sort of help you through it.
I can also use distraction techniques, which is probably the easiest one. Apart from the breathing techniques, use distraction techniques. Anything to kind of calm you down, to kind of calm your nerves down.
Very interesting. One other interesting question that I have, especially in the times that we're living in now, there's a very broad spectrum of sexual orientation. So is that also related to mental problems and high suicidality in young people?
Well, to an extent, especially if the person comes from a family that is not really accepting.
Okay.
It's like, because sexual orientation is not a mental disorder. It's not a mental illness. Okay. So, but it also depends on the kind of family, if the family is accepting or not accepting, if the person is being ostracized by the family, that could also make things worse, make them depressed and all that. So, it depends on the family acceptance and the societal acceptance. I mean, I know in some countries, most Western world, they accept it. It's normal. But most some other countries do not. They still see it as, in fact, they have laws, they have taboos, some even have laws against it. Some are even prosecuted because of that. So it depends on where the person is based. But in the society where it is being accepted, then the occurrence of mental illness will probably be very, very minimal due to their sexual orientation. Does that answer your question?
Because yes, it's
quite,
it does.
Quite broad. Yeah.
It actually does.
I also think that when it comes to sexuality, sexual orientation, I think it's a debate now that's going on quite a lot. And I see a lot of young people who come in who've got these problems where they're going through gender reassignment and things like that. But it's about, they don't feel like they're being understood. And sometimes when they're young people, they don't really understand what is going on within themselves. And they have to have the right type of help, because it might go either way, and it might go really wrong. It might be they're going through stages in life that they don't understand what is going on within themselves, and they just need that support and direction. And I know that here, I think in the UK, there is a lot of support for young people. You can signpost them to those organizations that mm-hmm. deal with that. But I'm quite sure if you go to the African countries where we're from, it's quite difficult. There are no organizations, that many organizations that are there or quite out there in the open that will help people who are going through that struggle. So it might lead a lot of people who tend to, a lot of young people that I've seen who are going through that gender problems would be withdrawn and would sort of, they don't feel like they belong. And that might, you know, they might experience low mood or depression because of that. And they might as well, some have tend not to go out at all because they don't feel that they belong out there. So they're so withdrawn and you don't see them out there. So it's about the families, you know, sort of getting involved, because it's a very, it's something that's new, but that's coming up quite often. So it's educating yourselves. I mean, even us as professionals, some of us are not, you know, trained in that. So we have to educate ourselves. And it's something that's very new, but it's now, I don't think it's too new, but I think it's not been out there.
Yeah, now it's more in the limelight.
Yeah, so now it's in the limelight because people are wanting more. People, they, we are getting to know more about, you know, things like gender reassignment, things like what is gender, because, you know, there's different types of it, you know. So once you know that there's binary, there's all sorts of things out there.
Yeah.
So I myself am not well versed in that. I'm still learning. So if somebody comes to me with those problems, I tend to signpost them to other organizations where they can relate. And I know now there's a lot of online groups that tend to help, especially the young people, to sort of have a sense of belonging and join groups that they can relate to, because not many people understand that.
They need a safe space where they can express themselves without being judged.
That's true. Yep.
That's true.
In your line of work, have you ever had a case where you had to convince a patient the contrary of mental health being due to witchcraft? Like, especially people that are relocated from less developed countries or sometimes in the Black community?
Not really. I mean, I was in the UK for 10 years before I moved to Canada. What I've seen most of the time is people not, because of, they still have that fear of stigmatization. They don't want to come out and talk about their mental health, really. So they try to shy away from it. But what I tend to see more often also is a lot of drug-induced psychosis, especially with Africans in diaspora. It's not that there are no drugs in Africa, don't get me wrong, but I think they come here, they're freely available, and they try it, and you see a lot of them coming to hospital. So, of course, you have to treat them, try to talk to them about what effects might have on them. Because I see a lot of students when they come to the emergency room, especially foreign students come in, and they have a lot of that. So, and then, of course, some of them also have a family history of mental illness, which some of them do not really want to accept. So they kind of they don't really want to, they're not open about it, even though they have a family history. I mean, everybody keeps it on that wrap, sort of. It's not a popular topic, and it's because of that fear of stigmatization. Nobody wants to, they don't want to be labeled as having mental illness. So, but once they're educated and they know that, see, it's just mental health, mental illness is just like having physical illness, just like having diabetes or hypertension or anything like that. So if you try and make them see that with that, see, it is any form of illness and it's treatable. So a lot of them are now open to it. I mean, we had back in January, I had a lecture in a local church about mental illness, and there are lots of questions, and they still want me to come back because that was even about an hour and a half. I still wanted to come back because now they start talking about specific illnesses, because it was just a broad presentation of mental illness, what it's all about. Yeah. So, because I've noticed that most Africans it's not something they feel comfortable talking about. So they need that education. And then just to make them say, see, we are all prone to mental illness, whether we are Africans or Caucasians or Asians. And the occurrence of mental illness is the same all over the world. So it's not as if it's specific for Caucasians alone or Africans.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just that they are more accepting. So we have to more be open about that, to accept that and then seek treatment.
Yeah. Well, I think that I agree with what Dr. Yum is saying, because I think there's a lot of stigma attached in most of our communities, especially in the Black and ethnic minority. But if we go and look at maybe here in the UK, the criminal justice system, if we look at the mental health services, there's more of Black and ethnic minorities, because I think of some, it's economic, where they mm-hmm. need access to, you know, services. And I think there can be some discouragement of people talking about their mental health issues within the Black and ethnic minorities. But as well, the statistics are not... There isn't a lot out there to look at, you know, the whole society, what's happening within the society, because it's sort of shielded, and people don't want to talk about it because they don't want to be stigmatized. But if you look at the ones that will come forth into the services, there's always some sociological impact from where they come from. You know, if you look at it, their backgrounds, their low earning backgrounds as well. Mm-hmm. So there's some homelessness within that community, or they're in low paid income. So there are really a lot of factors which affect, and migration as well, because if we look at, let's say, within, I can talk from the Zimbabwean community, a lot of people come here for a better life, and sometimes they tend to work in low-paid jobs, and they have to work to put in long hours
mm-hmm.
in their work, and then they've got children. So you'd find that those children end up looking after themselves, because the parents are out there earning, and the children are exposed to a lot of things when the parents are not there, and the parents are not observing what is going on with the children.
Mm-hmm.
So children are gullible. So if they're living in an area which is deprived, it means the area that they live in, there is access to all sorts of things which might expose their mental health.
Yeah.
To things that they shouldn't. And then you find that there's that high rise of saying, you know, within the Black and ethnic minority group, there is a high rate of mental illness, or there's a high rate of people going to prisons because of the social, you know, status that they have that impacts their mental health, even from, you know, a young age. You know, mm-hmm. if you look at young people from the age of maybe 12 to 24, you know, they're the ones who will be at risk, you know.
Yeah, so, and even the parents themselves don't realize that they themselves are under so much pressure, and even from the relocation, and like they're not taking care of their mental state. They're trying to take care of their families first. So they themselves are probably under a lot of pressure, and mm-hmm. the kids as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that it does impact, because the parents themselves, once they find out, it will be rather too late.
Mm-hmm.
The child will be already under the mental health services, or under social services, or under the criminal justice system. That's how they, you know, they will just realize, oh, I didn't realize that this was happening. But maybe once all these things come to light to the services, it means it would have started a while back. So it's a gradual progression, or a gradual build up of things that would be happening. So I think this is where, you know, within the Black and ethnic minority, there needs to be, you know, some education. You can see even with this COVID happening, you know, we are more exposed because we are the ones who are doing that job, so we it impacts the young people as well. It affects people's mental health because of our social, you know, status.
Yeah.
So basically, more of social deprivation.
Yeah. It does. Yep. It has a lot.
Because you're lonely. You have more time on your hands to really think about a lot of things and wallow in your mental space, so to say. So how best can we then take care of our mental health? How do we know when it's time to look for help? Are there places that we can reach out to even when we don't have an official diagnosis? Or I'm feeling like something's going on that I'm not understanding.
I think looking after my mental health, for me, as a health professional, it's about being consistent with what you're doing. It's about being active, I think, because they say a healthy body is a healthy mind. If we look after our bodies, we exercise, we eat right, we socialize appropriately, keep our mind active, we maintain that balance. And I think sometimes having something else within your life so that you have that equilibrium in your life is very important. Because we, you know, when people are depressed, we'll say, go to the gym, join the gym, exercise, you know,
do something. It helps with the chemical balances as well. Yes. Yeah.
It raises the endorphins. So we do advocate for that. And having friendships and having healthy relationships, it does help. Just to keep a balanced life helps to keep a balanced mind, I think.
And then one other thing, I mean, in addition to what Hazza said, I mean, looking at avoiding drugs and alcohol, making sure you are sleeping, getting enough sleep at night, and then also making sure that you have a good work-life balance. Because I know that a lot of Africans, all we are concerned is about working, and paying the bills, and also sending money back home. It's not just taking care of your family here where you are. You're also taking care of family back home.
Pay black tax.
so all that, sometimes we tend to forget about just not even having that kind of work-life balance. We are working about 60, 80 hours a week. We sometimes can have negative effects on our mental health. So we need to look at that too.
Then they end up suffering a burnout.
Yeah, a total burnout, yeah. And we don't take care of our health. Like what has said earlier about, look at the COVID thing, is affecting more of the Black and Asian the minority group. The reason being that most of the time, we don't take care of our physical health, so we have a lot of more of comorbidity, what you call a lot of physical health concerns that we don't deal with, and then that's why the COVID thing is affecting us more. Because we have a lot of physical illnesses that we are not taking care of, because all in the name of working long hours, just to make sure that bills are paid, just to make sure that money is being sent back to Africa to take care of extended family. So all that has an impact on our mental health.
Yeah, so just having a balance in all those things.
Yes, balance in everything. Yeah.
So one more interesting question that I have to the both of you. Has working in the field had any impact on your personal lives in any way, be it positive or negative? Just being exposed to all these brains and interesting minds.
It does play a role. I think
there's no way it's not going to affect you.
It does so much. I think for me, since I've worked in the field, it has opened me to a lot of things because I've worked in most fields of psychiatry. So it's opened me up and it has, I think, given me a broad spectrum of life in general. Because you look at people as people, and you look at people, that person that comes to you, you take them as they are. Because if you just say, okay, I'm working on, let's say I'm working on a child and adolescent unit, all I deal with is children and that's all, then you get it wrong. And if you think all children are depressed, then you get it wrong. And I've realized that you learn from the patients, and the patients know themselves better than you do. And you have to listen to them. And listening is very important. Because I can give an example of this lady I worked with. She had dementia. She had early onset dementia. And, it, you know, throughout she would say, I'm very well off. I live in a fort. I have a plane. Somebody owes me £2 million. And everybody thought she was crazy. We just thought, why don't we investigate and go to this woman's house and see for ourselves? So this woman agreed, and when we got to her house, the wall for her house, it was like a fort. And when we got in, all the things that she said she had, she did have. So, and I everybody said, oh, why did you listen to her? And I said, well, you can't have a delusion that's repetitive all the time and not listen to that delusion. So we had, because everybody said, oh, she's delusional. We can't listen. She's delusional.
Because they were looking at her as her diagnosis, not as her as a person. Yeah.
So I think that that's sometimes true. Us as professionals, we tend to just think, okay, this person has got delusions. And then we say, oh, no, that's the delusion. That's not real. So we need to really listen to the patients, because they know. And we need to look at people as people and as individuals and accept them for who they are and help them with what problem they're giving you, because they know the answers. You know, once you start probing, they will tell you what they want, and you get more results with working with what they want than what you want as a professional.
And you, Dr. Yomi, you sometimes find yourself psychoanalyzing your friends and family.
No, I think I do agree with hers. The thing is that life makes me understand people better, because being a psychiatrist, I mean, I keep my mind very open. I'm open-minded. When I see someone, even if they're acting in a funny way or behaving a funny way, I tend to kind of be open and not be judgmental, because you really need to understand what that person is going through, why they are behaving that way. Just like Has said, if you are kind of seeing people as a diagnosis of a mental disorder, then you're not helping yourself. You need to be open-minded, try and see it from their own perspective. Try and actually be in their own shoes. It's like trying to see things from their own perspective, then it makes you a better person. And I think being a psychiatrist has actually helped me a lot. I'm a much better person.
I really love the energy and the way you think, you and Ms. Mwerume. So I'd really like you guys to send out some advice to the young people out there, to the young Black community, to the people in general that are listening to this, any words of advice and anything that can get them through if they're suffering mentally or if they want to make sure that they're mentally healthy.
If there's one thing I want them to take home today from this session, stay away from drugs. It messes you up big time. Mm-hmm. If that's all they remember, I think we have made an impact on their life.
Yeah.
That's from my perspective.
Thank you.
Well, I would like to say that young people should talk and not be shy to talk to people that are older and have got a bit more experience, and not to rely on social media and the internet for all the answers, because not all the answers are in social media and the internet. But sometimes you've got family that have got vast wealth of knowledge, and family and friends. Just be open. If you're going through something that you think you don't understand what is going on with you, just go to someone, talk.
That's some lovely advice. Thank you. I will take on that myself. I will try and remember that. No drugs, and talk to someone.
Okay.
So thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for sharing with us your wild knowledge and experiences. We really, really appreciate them. Thank you so much.
Okay, it's been a pleasure being here.
So guys, there you have it. I hope you guys enjoyed this week's segment of Spilling the Beans with Bean, featuring the professionals. I really had a lot of fun. I hope you guys did too during the whole discussion. And I also hope that you guys managed to take away some nuggets of wisdom that you're going to carry with you as we navigate this thing called life. And if you're out there and you're having mental problems, mental issues, you're not feeling okay, I just want to show you that it's okay not to be okay. But at the same time, I'm hoping you have a lot of people around you that you can love and trust and confide in and just offload. And I'm sending you a lot of love, light, positivity as you begin this journey to healing. Anyways, guys, you heard it for yourself. You now know the tips and tricks to maintaining a healthy mind. I hope this is very helpful for you guys. Oh, and you know, I don't just leave you guys without giving you some exclusive sauce at the end of a segment. This week, I have a very, very special track, which is not yet out. It's coming out on the 15th of June, on the birthday of this amazing, talented person that left us with this piece. The next track is Sandarera by Shuffle Music featuring Ndlonipho. Enjoy and have a lovely, lovely weekend with the biggest love from your bean.
Nje kukren hi plan ihlangena